London and Glasgow. Seven other suspects are still in custody. Two of the suspects in the recent failed bombs have reportedly contacted an agency for foreign doctors about the possibility of working in the U.S., according to the FBI. In a 2-1 ruling today, a federal appeals court dismissed a lawsuit challenging President Bush's domestic spying program. The court said the plaintiffs, who were supported by the ACLU, This is the Quality News Network. British police say an Iraqi doctor has been charged in connection with last week's attempted car bombings in London and Glasgow. Seven other suspects are still in custody. Two of the suspects in the recent failed bombs have reportedly contacted an agency for foreign doctors about the possibility of working in the U.S., according to the FBI. In a 2-1 ruling today, a federal appeals court dismissed a lawsuit challenging President Bush's domestic spying program. The court said the plaintiffs, who were supported by the ACLU, had no standing to sue the government. The Navy is investigating claims that Marines killed up to 10 unarmed civilians in Iraq at Fallujah in 2004. The allegations were made by a former Marine who took a polygraph test as part of a job application for the Secret Service. The commander of the multinational division in Iraq warned that if the surge forces are withdrawn too soon, there would be serious setbacks. Army Major General Rick Lynch said, quote, it would be a mess. The commander of U.S. forces in northern Iraq also expressed a similar sentiment earlier this week. Republican Senator Pete Domenici of New Mexico is the latest member of the GOP to break with the president's policy on Iraq. He said, quote, we cannot continue asking our troops to sacrifice indefinitely while the Iraqi government is not making measurable progress. The heat wave that has brought triple-digit temperatures to the western U.S. continues. Records are expected to be broken today. Yesterday, the temperature was 115 degrees in Phoenix. More heavy rain has hit eastern Texas. Many roads are flooded and closed in several counties. A total of 13 people have died in weather-related incidents across Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas. At the Las Vegas Casino, New York, New York today, a gunman opened fire and wounded five people. He was tackled by off-duty police officers and bystanders. The suspect was said to have fired randomly at the crowd of gamblers on the casino floor. The FBI is investigating handwritten letters to 20 U.S. newspapers which threaten the Goldman Sachs investment firm. However, the death threat warnings are not considered to be of, quote, high credibility. Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf's plane was reportedly fired upon when it took off today, according to an intelligence officer. However, the government denies that the attack took place. You are listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business next.
Here's good news about your money. Monterey County Bank has won the Bauer Financial 5-Star Superior Rating for financial strength and stability, making it one of the safest banks in Monterey County for your money. It's nice to know your money is in a safe place, but there are even more reasons to bank with Monterey County Bank. They now have four convenient locations in Carmel, Monterey, Carmel Valley, and Pacific Grove. And Monterey County Bank is the oldest locally owned bank, now celebrating its 30th anniversary serving you. Here's another important point. Local businesses have come to trust and rely on Monterey County Bank's position as the county's number one SBA small business lender. Safety, convenience, and local people you can trust. That's Monterey County Bank. Stop in at one of our four branches and find out why you can bank on us. Monterey County Bank, SBA preferred lender and equal housing lender, member FDIC.
New American research indicates that organic fruits and vegetables are better for your heart than conventionally grown produce. A 10-year study suggests that nitrogen in the soil may make the difference. Burger King announced by the end of next year it will stop using oil with trans fats. The second largest hamburger chain follows other restaurants, including Starbucks, Taco Bell, and KFC, in the decision to become trans fat free. In June, the unemployment rate was 4.5%. The Labor Department says that 132,000 new jobs were added by employers. That is 7,000 more than economists had expected. The demand for financial workers means many college students who are accounting majors are getting numerous job offers as well as perks such as vacations and sign-on bonuses, according to the Washington Post. The accounting firm PricewaterhouseCoopers will pay $225 million to settle a class action case. It was brought by the investors in Tyco International after the accounting scandal. Microsoft says it will spend at least $1 billion to repair problems with its Xbox 360 video game console. Customers have been reporting general hardware failures in recent months. Light sweet crude is trading at $72.81 a barrel today. And at the close of Wall Street this week, the Dow Jones was up 46 points, the NASDAQ up 10, the S&P 500 up 5. There's always more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Allie Dramoff.
Okay, thank you.
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Agnes? Would you stop fading my music, please? Thank you, dear. How are you ever going to get your union card doing stuff like that, Agnes? Welcome, everybody, to the Friday afternoon edition of Head On. It's about 6 minutes, 6.5 minutes past the hour, because I'm the only guy who owns a clock, and you need me to tell you what time it is. I'm just tickled pink to be with you. It's taken a day or so to sort of recover from last night. Something happened. The world wobbled on its axis, and I just felt like, ugh. It just didn't work out very well last night, and I felt like I owed you an apology, but I've been told not to, and that someone will reach through the phone line and throttle me by my scrawny neck if I ever apologize to you again, so, you know, I got to stop.
I think the 3333 number has bottomed down.
No, it
hasn't.
Why are you trying to call somebody, honey?
I'm not.
Then hang up. Okay. Well, right. Okay, so a little follow-up email first from our good friend Teresa in somewhere in Ontario, Canada. She says, "I just listened to last night's podcast of the show. What an inspiring rant! One of your best." Were we listening to the same podcast, Teresa? I am very, very hard on myself in terms of what I expect from me during 3 hours of programming, and I wanted to crawl under a rock with a bottle of 200 proof absinthe last night when it just sort of make it all go away, because I don't know. But anyway, she says, like you, I find it almost impossible to listen to this murderer at any time, meaning Bush. However, I'm particularly enraged by the lies that spewed forth from his evil maw on July 4th. I refer specifically to his heady claim that the terrorist training camps in Afghanistan have been shut down and 25 million Afghans have been liberated. Mr. Bush needs to explain that to the families of the 6 Canadian soldiers blown to smithereens by an IED on America's Independence Day. Canada now has the dubious honor of having the most NATO soldiers killed, 66, as of July 4th, second only to the American death toll, which is into the several hundreds now. Speaking of U.S. military deaths in Afghanistan, why are they underreported by the press? Why doesn't the CNN scrawl include a mention of those deaths when they show their running tally of the soldiers killed in Iraq? Is their sacrifice not worthy of mention? Do they not want us to think about the fact that had Bush not abandoned Afghanistan for his war of choice in Iraq, the situation in Afghanistan might be more like the fantasy one he describes? What a deluded, sick, evil man. Has America had enough yet? P.S. My head really, really, really hurts right now. We've got a... Teresa, dear, I think we have a continent-wide migraine brought on with all of this. But I thank you for your words. Let's get something clear. The reason we underplay Afghanistan is because if we were to give Afghanistan the kind of coverage it deserves, we would find out what a tawdry, screwed-up, snafu'd, foobard affair it truly is. And we can't be doing that because there's a terror that we want the American people to feel, but it's got to be managed terror. God, I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. We've got to manage the terror that America feels. We can't let them know that there's terror out there that can actually turn into something. That's why we get this sort of Zen minimalist coverage of the meltdown of Pakistan that I mentioned a couple of times last night. Well, you know, they got this red mosque and there's a bunch of people in it, and they tried to shoot down Pervez Musharraf's airplane today, but he's fine. He's feeling very nice. He's having a lemonade. That place is a powder keg. Because Pakistan is just chock full. There are more Osama bin Laden supporters in Pakistan than there are just about anywhere else in the world right now. And that includes Iraq. But we can't let you know that, because then America would really, really soil its shorts, because Pakistan not only has the greatest concentration of Osama bin Laden supporters in the world, it also already has nukes. Far better to keep America wetting its pants over the idea of a nuclear Iran 10 years from now as justification for bombing the snot out of them and killing women and children, beasts of the field, that kind of thing, in a year or two, than to deal with the real problem, which is a nuclear Pakistan and a nuclear arsenal falling into the hands of people who are, crazy. You know, James Dobson crazy, the James Kennedy crazy, the Pat Robertson crazy. I mean, crazy. Only Muslim. So that's why that is. That's why Afghanistan can't, we can't hear much about that. Plus, you know, we've got to hear more about Iraq, because Iraq is our manly military experience. And if we start talking a lot about Afghanistan, we'll have to remind people that, yeah, the British are there, and the Canadians are there, and the French are there, NATO is there. Can't have people be thinking that we're out there fighting shoulder to shoulder with a bunch of cheese-eating surrender monkeys who are as good or better at this kind of thing than we will ever dream of being. Mm-mm. No, sunshine, can't be having that. And then our good friend Marty writes in and says, if you really want to leave last night in the past and probably the best course, go ahead and delete this message, but I won't do that because I'm not that kind of guy. Marty says, it's probably a good thing that I have to commute home during the last hour of Head On, because I would have tried to call in and would have had to call in and challenge Ben Birch's account. As it was, I just listened to the last hour of the show and needed to get this out. One, follow the money. Who got rich because of 9/11? Two, such a conspiracy does not require the many, just a few well-placed individuals to direct attention away. Follow the money. Number three. Four, anyone not of the inner circle likely died shortly afterwards. Dead men tell no tales. Five, the inconvenient truth, neither George W. Bush or Osama bin Laden represent the top of this food chain. Six, did I mention follow the money? Seven, I have never believed in Occam's razor. The simple explanations, while easier to digest, rarely represent reality. Do you really believe that only Lee Harvey Oswald shot JFK? Anyway, if you've read this, Bob, thanks. Have a good show. I'll listen to the first 2 hours live. Marty. That's the bottom line for me as far as any discussion of 9/11 is concerned. Because of that old saying, what is it, the admission of ignorance is the beginning of wisdom? I admit I don't know. I admit that the government has not told us the full story. The government didn't even try to. The 9/11 Commission was a ginned up, dummied up, faked up fraud. All right? When, you know, it doesn't matter who's the dummy and who's the ventriloquist, when George and Dick have to go in together in secret under no oath, no recordings, and no handwritten notes, Jesus, they could have gone in and said that they did it with their little hatchet, and there'd be no record of it. So, I believe me, I don't believe... Based on the fact that the outcome doesn't change whether the buildings stand or the buildings come down after the planes go into them, I don't see them actively doing the demolition, okay? I see them facilitating this. I see them either intentionally or grossly negligently standing by and standing down while it happened because it suited their nefarious, evil, vile, vindictive, bloodthirsty, money-hungry aims. Profit this again. Go back. Get a. It's kind of hard to come by these days. I understand, but get a copy of Smedley Butler's "War Is a Racket." It still applies. This is a con. This is in fact a racket. It's an incredibly lucrative racket because you've got a political philosophy in operation right now that is specifically designed to minimize the effectiveness of the American military while at the same time maximizing the profit potential. That's why the military doesn't deliver its own mail anymore. That's why the military can't feed itself. That's why the military can't do its own laundry. That's why everything's farmed out to 25 cent an hour South Asians who are brought in as contract labor for Halliburton and then enslaved. I'm not making anything up. You can look up every last bit of what I said, and you'll find it to be true. I'm no oracle. We just talk about facts here. Okay? And one of those facts is that it is hotter than the smoking hubs of hell all across the country, including here. You know, we're about 2,000 feet elevation, and when we get to 95 and 96 and 97 degrees, it's miserable. I know. It's literally a question of degree between 116 and 97. But it is, all across the country, very, very hot. And with that, I would like to share something with you. It's not news as such. Mm-mm. Sorry, I've got to keep the cigar going. Keeps away the gnats and the mosquitoes. Just like my gin and tonic keeps away the malaria. Oh, I'm feeling kind of malarial. Somebody pour me a gin and tonic. No, I'm kidding. I get this look from Agnes. She turns around and looks back at me and goes, "What?" Yeah, it's the quinine in the tonic water. High fructose corn syrup in my tonic water, too. It pisses me off. No, it is hot, and it is dangerously hot out there. I broke down and went and bought a box. You want to know how bad off I get? I went and bought a box of popsicles. I just wanted that, yeah, and for the kids and for me, just to have that little bit of coolness going on. And ran into a guy in the grocery store, and of course, you know, the grocery store conversation. Hot, ain't it? Yep, Bush's fault. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and he says, you know, I was going to mow my grass, but then I started feeling a little peaked, and decided I'd wait till the sun hit it down to finish. Heat stroke's no fun, no matter where you are. And thus, it struck me as particularly evil. These press releases I get encouraging me to have people on my show who are hustling right wing reading material usually. Are a really, really good indicator, a litmus test, if you will, a little view into the microscope of just how wicked the conservative Christian right wing is. I offer for your examination the following, coming from one of the right-wing flaxters. They usually everything that comes out of these people at some point is going to be hustled by either news muck or, you know, one of those right-wing rags. For immediate release, 6 July 2007. Look around in many other cities nationwide. Other cities? Which cities? How about all cities? Look around in many other cities nationwide, and you'll see people trying to beat the summer heat at the pool, sitting under a shade tree, or sipping a glass of iced tea close to the air conditioner. But where can a homeless person escape the extreme temperatures that occur at this time of year? With record high temperatures in Las Vegas and elsewhere, there are increased cases of sunstroke and dehydration, many times undiagnosed. Offering insight into the plight of homeless trying to beat the heat is Denver Moore, former homeless man turned book author. We're going to leave that grammar and syntax alone just to try to get me through the rest of this thing without me just turning purple. During your interview, he shares with your audience tips on how to help people we see on our city streets. He answers common questions like, should I give cash to street people, or is that just hurting them but allowing them to buy alcohol with that money? And should I offer food instead of money? Should I carry McDonald's gift certificates to avoid giving cash? Yeah, there's a good idea. Give McDonald's food to the homeless. Go from malnourished to malnourished to poisonously nourished. You really can't lose on that proposition. Should I dare actually offer work for food, as their signs sometimes solicit? Now, remember, this is a pitch for a right-wing book. Remember these people, the compassionate Christians? Some helpful tips on helping the homeless. Don't give money. Don't give monetary handouts. Money could be used to buy food or drugs that might inhibit a person's ability to sense the harmful effects of exposure to heat and sun. Well, let's stop right there for a moment. Did you just hear what the conservative, Christian, compassionate crowd said? Don't give food to the hungry. I don't have my New Testament handy here right at the moment, but my memory is in pretty good shape so far. And I do seem to recall something expressly opposite. And by the way, there is global warming, but still, Palestine in the last decade of, in the first decade of the Common Era, was still a pretty daggum warm place. And so they had issues like this, people becoming prostrate from the heat. And even so, Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter who never had a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of, at no point does he say, only give food to the hungry if it's not really hot outside. No. No, and he never said, don't give drink to the thirsty unless you know that, oh God, no, this is, but see, this, that's the point. These are monsters. These are antichrists, you understand, who are running around flogging their Bibles as a means of screwing over the least among us. What? If you've not done it unto the least of these, you've not done it also unto me, and go ye unto the lake of everlasting fire, which is prepared for the devil and his angels. That part? Phew! Lord, Lord, I'd like a bottle of water. I'm sorry, you're in hell, and that might keep you from understanding that you're in hell if I was to give you a bottle of water. Can't be doing that for you hellbound people. offer giving bottled water, and refer the person to an agency that provides food, shelter, and other assistance. Isn't it the Republicans and the right-wingers and the compassionate Christians who are always complaining about how, you know, we need the government to be the nanny? You Democrats want a nanny state where everybody's needs is all met by the government. Well, this is saying that you shouldn't give a buck to a homeless guy, but instead that you should send him to a shelter where he can be tormented with bureaucracy. And how many years have you been homeless? I'm sorry, how long since you've had a shower? You'll need to take a shower before you can get a drink. Oh, yeah, wait. I'm sorry, how do you like to have sex? Oh, too bad. You're homosexual? Oh, you can't have shelter here because we know how you people are. Because the men have to sleep with the men and the women have to sleep with the women, and we just can't have that sort of thing going on in the night. You'll have to go somewhere and die, please. Jesus loves you. Helping a homeless shelter is helping the homeless. Now, wonder why you'd see something. Helping a homeless shelter is helping the homeless. I agree in general, but these people are out hustling faith-based homeless shelters. Okay? And so they are, after all, just out there hustling money for the greatest tax-exempt fraud in the history of the United States, i.e., the religion industry. So all these questions are going to be answered by a man named Denver. Denver is a... God, I love the way these people write. It's like, you know, you would expect this from Steve Martin. Those are the words of Denver Moore, a black man raised picking cotton in the 1960s under plantation-style virtual slavery in Louisiana. Oh, virtual slavery. He logged onto a computer every day and... No, it was real slavery. It just, you know, it's Louisiana, it's in the 1960s, and you don't have to call it slavery. But the effect, by and large, is the same. Sure. Darn it, cigar went out. Uneducated, without friends, he spent 18 years under the slavery of the homelessness. I'm sorry, I didn't write this. I want you to hear this again. Grammar, right-wing grammar on parade. If this was not a real right-wing press release, I wouldn't be able to do this. Uneducated, without friends, he spent 18 years under the slavery of the homelessness on the streets of Dallas and Fort Worth. But when his homeless world collided with the world of a rich white art dealer named Ron, both lives were changed for the better forever. During your interview with Denver and or Ron, authors of the new book, the hearts of your audience will be touched in a way that they will never be the same. Says Denver, after I met Miss Debbie and Mr. Ron, I worried that I was so different from them that we wasn't ever going to have no kind of future. Look, Agnes, you see where they're writing in dialect there? But I found out everybody's different, the same kind of different as me. We're all just regular folks walking down the road God done set in front of us. It's a tale told in two unique voices, Ron and Denver, weaving these two completely different life experiences into one common journey where both men learn, quote, whether we is rich or poor or something in between, this earth ain't no final resting place. So in a way, we is all homeless, just working on our way toward home. That's right, Denver, buddy. We're all homeless. Some of us are so homeless that we're confined to 15,000 square foot homeless shelters with, gold-plated toilet fixtures and $15,000 shower curtains and $10,000 umbrella stands. Yeah. No. Don't look over there. No, the rich people are just as bad off as the homeless people. Don't worry. They're just as sad. They've got money, but they may not have love. The story takes a devastating twist when Deborah discovers she has cancer. Will Deborah live or die? Will Denver learn to trust a white man? Will Ron embrace his dying wife's vision to rescue Denver? Or will Denver be the one rescuing Ron? There's pain and laughter, doubt and tears, and in the end, a triumphal story that readers will never forget. Now dig this. They are hustling a damn book by telling people not to give a buck to the guy who comes up and says, "You got a little extra change, man? It's mighty hot out here." See, I'm a sucker, and I'm not a sucker. I am a free individual, and I don't have a bunch of money by any stretch of the imagination. We wouldn't be soliciting donations on this network via the little button there at headonradionetwork.com if we had a bunch of money rolling around. But if I've got a buck or two, Agnes has seen it. Agnes has even occasionally castigated me for it. If somebody comes up and says, "You got a buck?" If I've got a buck, I'll give the buck. And no, I've also had right-wingers look at me who were in my company at the time. "You know he's only going to use that to buy liquor." And I look at him and say, "Well, Jesus, I hope he gets enough to buy a chaser with it. Why do you want to help him buy liquor?" "Because he's got a really sad and miserable existence, and maybe he can get a couple of shots and forget it for a little while. Because you and your Christian buddies aren't making it any better. You're not out there, you right-wing Christians. You're not out there advocating for a $20 an hour minimum wage. Now, are you? If we start talking about a living wage in America, what's the first thing out of your mouth? Religious, Christian, compassionate right-wingers, what's the first thing out of your mouth now? Come on! First thing out of your mouth is, you know, it'll be bad for business." Isn't it? Sure it is. "Yeah, but, you know, he's only going to buy alcohol. He might, you know, he might buy some of that marijuana." Goody! Again, maybe it will ease the pain of suffering through this right-wing, Republican, conservative, compassionate, Christian existence. You know, I had a very good friend once upon a time. God, he could tell you what time it was and you would wind up laughing. Agnes knows who I'm talking about. And this is a classic, this is along the lines of what I'm talking about. He was helping to take care of a friend's swimming pool. I'm going to put, you know, go sprinkle the chlorine powder on the pool. Agnes is already laughing. And he pulls the lid off of the chlorine canister, you know, the big 50-gallon drum chlorine canister. And, you know, it's kind of aerosolized inside the canister. And it goes up into his face, and he breathes in this dry particulate chlorine, which just begins to burn him unmercifully. And his helper comes up, who... oh, is one of the least among these that Jesus used to talk about. And the guy is standing there, literally his eyes are burning, his nasal passages are aflame, he's ready to start coughing up blood, and the helper comes up and goes, "Chops, you want a cup of coffee?" And the poor dude just looks up with his face all blown out and his eyes watering and the drooling. And
can't say what John said.
No, come on. Okay, I can't, but you can. Please. Please, please, Agnes. You got to finish. Agnes. So the guy looks up and says,
without everything involved, Chops looks at him and goes, no, I don't want a cup of coffee. I want an EMT. But you just had to know Chops and hear the story told the way that he tells it, because it was a gem.
Oh, now see, you wimped out real bad there, dear.
Yes, I did.
Oh, well, I was trying to get you to say your first really exciting, sexy word on the radio there.
It doesn't excite me, Bob.
But it's that same sort of thing. You're homeless. Would you like a Bible? You're homeless. You're hungry. May I offer you the New Testament? You're burning up and you're dehydrated. Could I offer you the 23rd Psalm? No! No. I need water. I need food. And I need to cool the hell off. Well, confess Christ as your personal Lord and Savior and you can come into the air conditioning right now. But if you don't, you just stay in hell. Or Las Vegas. There's a reason I despise the religion industry. This is one of them. Don't give them money. Funny, there's nothing in the New Testament about don't give homeless people money. And the fact of the matter was, a whole bunch of the people in New Testament first decade of the common, couple of decades of the common era time, whole bunches of people were homeless. And the only thing you ever see coming out of Yeshua's mouth is, you got a shekel, give him a shekel. You got a denarius, give him a denarius. Because if you're not giving him a denarius, it's the same as not giving a denarius to me. But it's lost and it's gone, and that's why these people are an abomination to the name of Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter, quite frankly. But when you hear this stuff, because odds, you know, if it's coming into my email box, it's gone into 5,000 other email boxes trying to get this dude on the air to hustle his book on the back of telling people not to give a buck to a homeless dude because he might buy a draft beer with it. Yeah. That is a level of shamelessness that I personally cannot contemplate. And praise Jesus, don't give the homeless any money. Instead, spend your money on our book. It's a... Oh, what is it? What is it? What is it? What, wait. I set this thing aside. Doggone it. What is it? What kind of book is it? Oh, yeah. It's a triumphal story that readers will never forget. I'm hungry. I'm thirsty. Could I have a dollar? No, but you can have a triumphal story that readers will never forget. Oh, thanks. You want a cup of coffee? All right, we'll take a break. You want to jump into the conversation? Come right ahead. We got plenty of stuff to go into this evening. That's not the beginning. That is the beginning, but it's certainly not anywhere near the end. By the way, if you were pretty well worked over the Scooter Libby commutation, screw it, it's a pardon. Other judicial action today as well that will make you I just threw up a little bit in my own mouth. Yeah, that. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is the Horn. This is America's liberal voice. 304-658-5912. We'll be back.
We don't talk too much about it.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
If you missed Strictly Confidential last week, you missed Gay Fashion Tips.
So I'm sitting here in my Florida State University t-shirt and my pajama bottoms.
You missed what gay DJs named their dogs.
Disco and Boogie are their names.
You missed Lesbian Bible Study.
And that's my favorite line, too, out of the Bible, like, thou shalt not lie with a man, so I don't, and so what's up with that?
You missed Kiss and Tell.
And this big, tall, handsome Air Force sergeant bent down and kissed me, and I didn't wash my lips for weeks.
You missed The Pursuit of Happiness.
Are you attached, Mom?
Well, see, now this is Strictly Confidential, isn't it?
Tune in Monday through Friday at 9 p.m. Eastern for Strictly Confidential, gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered conversation radio, exclusively on the Head On Radio Network. You know you want to.
My daughter and I would ever think the same thing is cool.
At home, my boys are like a wrecking ball. But when they volunteer, they're actually shaping things up.
Hey, they planted trees at the local park. Clean the place up.
She makes new friends. She has a great time.
My son loves it. He's contributing.
These are nice kids.
The Are You Into It volunteer program is a great way for you and your kids to make a difference in the community while making friends. So, if you're into it, or you think your kid might be, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH. Or visit our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
We can't get him to clean his room, but he loves volunteering.
A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
All righty, welcome back. 17 before the hour. And while they're having problems at homeless shelters all across the country helping people who are in need to stay cool and maintain reasonable body temperature, the same does not apply in Davenport, Iowa. Now, many of you may have already heard this story, but I'm guilty, okay? I am absolutely guilty of hanging on to stories until they form some sort, they gel, if you will, into some sort of a cohesive whole. Because as this supposed heat wave, I don't know how much of a heat wave it is. Las Vegas is 116 degrees, like was said last night on the program. I think it was our good friend Kate from Arizona. It's July in Las Vegas, and it's supposed to be 116 degrees because it's in a desert. Deserts are hot places in the daytime and cold places at night. That's just how it works. But not in Davenport, Iowa. Back toward the end of End of the month of June, a Detroit man was sentenced to 5 years in prison. Why? Well, David McMenemy, a 46-year-old man, pleaded guilty this past January to arson against a business affecting interstate commerce. He could have gotten up to 20 years in prison. He's only going to do five. What did David McMenemy do? David McMenemy drove to Davenport, Iowa, all the way from Detroit, and crashed his car into the Edgerton Women's Healthcare Center lobby at 4:30 a.m. on September 11th. Then he lit a Gatorade bottle filled with gasoline. Well, okay, this is an Associated Press story. This is one of those little journalism moments. All you folks with a love for the language, listen up. This is professional writing. Someone got paid to type this. He then lit a Gatorade bottle filled with gasoline on fire, walked away from his car, and surrendered to firefighters. He was ordered to pay $263,252 in restitution for damage to the clinic. Maybe Scooter could write that check for him. He writes $250,000 checks these days. That's what I hear. And he's supposed to continue receiving mental health treatment while imprisoned and when he's released. He said, "I'm sorry for the hurt and shame of my family, and I want to distance myself from any pro-life organizations." Yep, there it is! Because it was, after all, the Edgerton Women's Healthcare Center. David McMenemy, 46 years old and religiously insane, thought he was going to burn down an abortion clinic where the little fetuses was being killed. There's only one problem. The Edgerton Women's Health Care Center provides prenatal care and medical services to low-income and underprivileged women. It does not perform any sort of family planning services. Now, this guy's going to have mental health counseling in prison, but the fact of the matter is, until he gets his head around the fact that no great big sky god critter with the big fluffy flowing white beard wants him to kill the people who are murdering the fetuses, until he realizes that that's all a bunch of made up BS, there's not going to be any help for David McMenemy. It was wrong, he told U.S. District Court Judge John Jarvie at the sentencing hearing. Even if it was an abortion clinic, it would still be wrong. Of course, I'm an excellent driver. I drive slow on the driveway. Somebody cue up Lee Greenwood singing God Bless the USA, would you, Agnes? I'm kidding. I know you will, but don't do it. The fine folks who are sharing their time with us do not deserve to be subjected to that. Yep. He then lit a Gatorade bottle filled with gasoline on fire. I have no idea what that sentence means. No idea whatsoever. He was facing up to 20 years in prison for this terrorist act. Can somebody do a little, can somebody use the Google for me? I'm a little busy here. But I need to find out a little something about U.S. District Court Judge John Jarvie of Iowa. Need to know what U.S. District Court Judge John Jarvie, when he went on the bench. Need to understand why a terrorist who drives a car into a clinic and tries to burn it down. Gee, didn't that something like that happen in the last week or so in, like, Scotland? And aren't we having an international 75-square-foot purple polka-dotted blue screaming hissy about it? And yet, David McMenemy, who did the same damn thing last January in Davenport, Iowa, barely even turned into a blip on the national media radar screen. There are a lot more incredibly violent Christian Reconstructionist, Dominionist terrorists in the United States of America than there are terrorists of any other stripe or variety, no matter how hard they try to gin you up otherwise. Thank you, Lottie. Dadgum, that Bob Lottie, he's quicker. He's quicker on the Google draw than Wyatt Earp. Judge John A. Jarvie. There it is. See? Thank you, Lottie. Entered on duty March 15th, 2007. Guess what? Nominated by President George W. Bush, January 9th, 2007. Confirmed by the freakish United States Republican Senate, March 8th, 2007. Sworn in March 15th, 2007. Just sentenced a domestic terrorist to 5 years when he should have given him 20. Now, the next time that Dear Leader comes out talking about the terrorists hate us for our way of life, you remember that we have caught terrorists in this country. That law enforcement has done their job. Of course, they didn't have to do much of a job. This screwball drove his car through the windows of the clinic and got out and lit a jug of Gatorade jug filled with gasoline on fire. I can't tell if he was already lighting it when it was already on fire, if he lit it and caught the bad journalism from the Associated Press. But that is the fact of the matter. There is terrorism to be afraid of in the United States. It is preached. It is condoned. It is encouraged. Every Sunday morning in right-wing religion industry pulpits all across the United States of America. It is enabled by the likes of Dobson and Robertson and Robison and Roberts and Robertson and D. James Kennedy and the Right to Life and the Operation Rescue and Operation Fetus and Operation Blastocyst and Operation Screw 'em Only After They're Born. And we need to set an example in this country that we will not tolerate their evil. Instead, 46-year-old David McMenemy stands before a U.S. District Court judge appointed by George Bush from a short list created by Karl Rove of people that they think they can count on to do their wicked bidding for years to come. And in an instance when he could have given him 20 years that would have sent a message to that filthy anti-abortion crowd, he weaseled, did Judge Jarvie. He weaseled and gave him 5, of which the dude will probably serve no more than 2.5. And you're right, Cossack, in the chat room. The eco-terrorists are getting a hell of a lot more for blowing up a bulldozer than this real terrorist is getting for trying to kill people. Kind of makes you wonder. It really does. Makes you wonder who the real terrorists are. Makes you wonder why, makes you wonder why doctors would decide to do terrorism. Again, remember, the so-called terrorists of 9/11 and elsewhere are not a bunch of uneducated, idiot, hopeless types. They are very well educated, many of them educated here. And they hear from their family abroad, back home. And they hear what the American government is doing to their homes. Oh, look, it was an Iraqi doctor who parked that car in London, so they say. Gee, why do you reckon an Iraqi doctor would want to start blowing up people in the UK? Any guesses? Any surmises? Any speculation why doctors who are supposed to be healers would go so far as to become killers in their own right? What if you were a doctor committed to healing, committed to easing the suffering of your suffering fellow humans? And you saw on a day-in and day-out basis in a blasted, burned-out, blown-over hell like Iraq, you saw the so-called good United States of America causing the mutilation, the mauling, and the horrible screaming death of thousands of your fellow countrymen every day. What would that make you think as a healer? Would it speak to some very base instinct that is inside us as human beings, way down in the core of the operating system, such that when you see your own being harmed, you want the other side to feel it too? Could that be why healers became killers in the UK? Could it be an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, such as is said in the West's Holy Bible? Could it be? Is it possible that a person from Iraq, from Jordan, who has seen the refugee stream, who has seen the ache and the agony come wandering naked and alone and terrified out of that hellhole we have created? Could it be that that person might decide to try to inflict a little bit of his own to wake up the people who were doing it to his own? I am not condoning that. A doctor in England or a freak in Davenport, Iowa are the same in my eyes. They are dirty, rotten, filthy killers. But it is damn sure dishonest for us to sit around and say that a doctor in London is a killer, but that a guy flying at 40,000 feet with a 2,000-pound bomb aimed at a mud hut isn't. That is not the kind of disingenuity, that is not the kind of dishonesty that you will ever get on this program. Get involved. It's time for the news. When we come back, your calls are more than welcome. 304-658-5912. 304-658-5912. I haven't figured out that it spells anything yet. But this is The Horn, the head-on radio network. This is America's liberal voice. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is the Quality News Network. Scotland Yard announced Iraqi doctor Bilal Abdullah is the first to be charged in connection with last week's attempted car bombings in London and Glasgow. The 27-year-old Abdullah is charged with conspiracy to cause explosions likely to endanger life. No charges have been announced yet for the seven other suspects in custody. The FBI revealed two of those suspects sought help to find work in the U.S. The Philadelphia Inquirer first reported the story, saying the two who are doctors contacted an agency for foreign medical graduates in the last year. A federal appeals court dismissed a lawsuit alleging President Bush's domestic spying program, challenging President Bush's domestic spying program. In its 2-1 ruling, the court said the plaintiffs, who were supported by the ACLU, had no standing to sue the government. U.S. diplomats abroad have been forced to curtail their activities due to security concerns. Heightened security measures and travel restrictions have been implemented at embassies and consulates in 28 nations, according to the Associated Press. The commander of the multinational division center in Iraq warned that if surge forces are withdrawn from that country too soon, there would be serious setbacks. The commander of U.S. forces in northern Iraq also expressed a similar sentiment earlier this week. Republican Senator Pete Domenici, meanwhile, of New Mexico, is the latest member of the GOP to break with the president's policy on Iraq. He said, quote, "We cannot continue asking our troops to sacrifice indefinitely while the Iraq government is not making measurable progress," end quote. The Navy is investigating claims that Marines killed up to 10 unarmed civilians in Fallujah, Iraq in 2004. The probe began after a former Marine answered a polygraph question as part of a test for a job with the Secret Service. He was asked if he participated in a wrongful death. In Islamabad, Pakistan, government troops launched a fresh assault on radical Islamists, killing two. The attack came as the radical students tried to break out of the Red Mosque, where they've been holed up for 4 days. A shooting at the Las Vegas casino, New York, New York, wounded at least four. Off-duty police officers and bystanders tackled the gunman. And the heat wave that's brought triple-digit temperatures to the western U.S. continues. You're listening to the Quality News Network, Science and Business, next.
This is Beyonce. For a performer, a smile is an instant reward. And once you've seen the smiles on the faces of children at Shriners Hospitals, you'll know why the Shriners have been providing their world-renowned medical care to kids for over 80 years at absolutely no charge. At Shriners Hospitals, innovative research and teaching programs are combined with specialized services and treatments for kids with orthopedic, burn, or spinal cord problems. For more information, call 1-800-237-5055. Shriners, having fun and helping kids.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
New American research indicates that organic fruits and vegetables are better for your heart than conventionally grown produce. A 10-year study suggests that the lack of fertilizer in organic produce may make the difference. And Burger King has announced by the end of next year it will stop using oil with trans fats. It's following other restaurants, including Starbucks, Taco Bell, and KFC. Iran says it will no longer produce cars that run purely on gasoline. In 2 weeks' time, all cars will be made with dual-fuel capabilities, allowing them to run on gasoline or liquid petroleum gas. Tehran recently imposed fuel rationing to cut down on government-subsidized gas. Iran imports 40% of its petroleum because it lacks refining capacity. The demand for financial workers means many college students who are accounting majors are getting numerous job offers, as well as perks and vacations and sign-on bonuses. Job growth for June in the U.S. was better than expected. Employers added 132,000 jobs. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $73.06 a barrel on the New York Mercantile. At the close of Wall Street today, the Dow Jones Industrials was up 46 points at 13,611. The NASDAQ was up 10 points and the S&P was up 5. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
5 past the hour. Another hour underway at the end of the week. This is your last shot for getting your licks in, as we like to say up here around the hills and hollers. Get the bee out from under your bonnet, the burr out from under your saddle, if you so choose, at 304-658-5912, 304-658-5912. It's not going to stay that way, the phone line, that is, forever. We will be back to our normal telephone number lineup. I don't know quite how to explain it, but we've got an incredibly expensive piece of telephone processing equipment here that had to go in to go in for repair. We're on a loaner, and only three of those lines work. So the way it works is because I've heard our own host saying, you know, gee, I think they took whacked the toll-free. No, it's not exactly that. The toll-free line rings onto line one. We don't have line one available to us. We're operating with lines 4, 5, and 6. So therefore, the toll-free number will not ring in. Does that make any sense? We hope that that situation will be corrected by the end of next week, God willing, and the crick don't rise. But until then, the phone number is 304-658-5912. Nothing has ever happened to change my email address, bob@headonradio.com. You can jump right in anytime you want to on that one. Let's take a step back for a moment, if you will. This is a reading moment. I apologize in advance. But this is eloquently said, and I think you'll appreciate it. The Baltimore Sun on Wednesday, July the 4th, published an editorial that gets a lot of stuff right. The title of the thing is Liberties Lost. Besides all his other gifts, Thomas Jefferson appears to have been prophetic. Of course, if you have already purchased Eric Peterson's Light and Liberty on the words of Thomas Jefferson, you will know that in advance. Besides all his other gifts, Thomas Jefferson appears to have been prophetic. In his first presidential inaugural address in 1801, he ticked off a long list of essential principles of government featuring highlights of the Bill of Rights and called preservation of the government, quote, in its whole constitutional vigor, quote, the anchor of our peace at home and safety abroad. These principles, according to Jefferson, should be the creed of our political faith, he said. Should we wander from them in moments of error and or of alarm, let us hasten to retrace our steps and to regain the road which alone leads to peace, liberty, and safety. Such moments of error or alarm have sent the government off on dangerous tangents from time to time over the years, but rarely with more wide-ranging consequences than the course embarked upon after September 11, 2001 attacks. On this, the 231st anniversary of Jefferson's eloquent declaration of independence from British rule, the United States is desperately in need of restoring the rights and freedoms surrendered in a false bid for security that has perversely put the nation at greater risk. Consider what has been lost. Sweeping federal measures, most of them heavily cloaked in secrecy, have robbed Americans of privacy, due process of law, even freedom of movement. Warrantless wiretaps, email surveillance, national security letters secretly demanding information on thousands of citizens, and soon to come the equivalent of national ID cards, all would be abominations to Mr. Jefferson. America's suspected enemies have fared worse. They have been tortured, held indefinitely without charge, and spirited away to secret prisons abroad so no one knows who they are or what has happened to them. The United States has been fortunate to have suffered no terrorist attacks since 9/11, but there's little evidence that any of these extraordinary measures have had anything to do with that. What they have done is to further isolate the United States at a time when the war in Iraq has left America with no global goodwill to spare, and Iraq has now become a proving ground for development of terrorist weaponry such as the roadside bomb and tactics. In the weeks and months after 9/11, when the Bush administration was paring back civil liberties through the cynically named Patriot Act, and travelers were coping with what would become increasingly burdensome restrictions, fearful Americans were persuaded to accept the sacrifice in return for a greater measure of safety. But Jefferson would argue that was a false choice. Liberty is the choice of security. An open, accountable government is the best protection against tyranny and incompetence. Travel restrictions in the form of identity papers aimed not at terrorists but at illegal immigrants represent the cost of unchecked power on the quality of American life. The portrait now emerging of Vice President Dick Cheney as the unseen hand behind many of the more outrageous violations of civil liberties, aided in part by Alberto R. Gonzalez, the lapdog of an attorney general, powerfully underscores Jefferson's point that the time has come to retrace these missteps and get back on the road to peace, liberty, and safety. Congress, now in Democratic hands, partly because of the backlash at these heavy-handed tactics, should begin the process by getting out all the facts. Americans have a right and a responsibility to know what's being done in their name and what effect it's having. Some might argue that such a public review would allow America's enemies to learn its secrets. Experience suggests, though, that secrecy often shields abuse and simple bungling. For example, Justice Department auditors reported in March that the FBI had misused, sometimes illegally, the national security letters through which it demands, with no prior court approval and no notice to the individual involved, personal information about Americans. The FBI acknowledges perhaps 1,000 such instances. A government that spies upon its citizens, evades the courts, and feels no compulsion to explain itself beyond vague warnings of security threats must be brought into check. The damage caused by terrorists on 9/11 begins to pale against the havoc wreaked upon America by America itself. Excellent words, commendable words. Now let's go. I wonder if the editors at the Baltimore Sun have the guts to go back and read what they wrote in the run-up to the invasion, the illegal invasion and occupation of Iraq. I'll betcha it's all there. Ooh, they've got aluminum tubes over there behind that palm tree. It's a mobile anthrax lab. Yes, indeed. It's all there. A little mea culpa doesn't change anything, but it at least lets us know that they recognize they screwed up and they recognize they did evil, and that perhaps they're on our side this time in trying to get back and undo some of the damage that they helped wreak. Let's talk to Alan down in Alabama. Hey, Alan, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Pretty good. How about you?
I'm getting along, I reckon. Mighty hot.
That's good. It's raining here, thank goodness.
Oh, nice. You need it.
Yeah. Hey, I was just looking at a website called impeachcheney.org, and it shows a little film here with him telling all his lies. I just thought I'd let you know.
Impeachcheney.org?
Yes.
Okay.
I guess that's one of many, probably, like that.
Well, I'm trying to remember. Our good friend Phil from Daytona Beach, Florida, called in to the Cup of Joe show this morning. They had a wonderful conversation. And there is some sort of a move afoot for an impeachment demand. And I can't remember the website that goes with that. If Phil's listening, maybe he can help out and remind us, because it's along the same lines.
Yeah, I got the link from this from a site. I think it's called... not People for the American Way, but something similar. Oh, Progressive Democrats of America.
Oh, okay, yeah.
That's looks like a pretty good organization. I was recently listening to MP3 files by a man named Michael Parenti. Have you heard of him?
Yes, I have.
And he was saying during fascist Italy that the government would take money from the working poor to give to the yet poor people. Does that sound familiar?
A little bit, yeah.
Yeah, sound like what's going on now. And I heard, like, it seemed like it's like 6 or 7 years ago that I heard the statistics that the wealthiest people in this country give like 1% of their income to charity.
That's probably around the right number. They pay, what is it, 90% of the wealth that's in this country is controlled by 0.1% of the population. This is an upside, you know, but see, the way it works out, Alan, is we're busy, you and me, and everybody else. Most people operate and work one or two, maybe if they're lucky, three or four paydays away from disaster. So we don't have a lot of time to look up and realize what that 0.1% of America that controls 90% of the wealth is actually up to. Because that's the way it's supposed to work. We've got to, we've got to hustle along and keep the credit card debt satisfied, or we're going to be in a world of hurt.
Yeah, when they give 1% of their income to charity, then they splash it all over, public radio and public TV, and make it look like what a wonderful job that they're doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's disturbing when you actually do get a hard look at it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think this book that you're talking about earlier, I think what it's trying to do is to let the people, the working class in this country, feel like they should feel comfortable with the position we're in.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, when somebody puts out a press release that says, there's no difference between a rich man and a homeless man, we're all just homeless on our way to heaven, that's the same con that's been run on working people for 2,000 years, Alan.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. That's the same thing that theocrats have been saying and feudal lords been saying for 2,000 years.
And it's all... the great labor activist songwriter, and his name escapes me right now, but he said, Joe Hill, he wrote a song and he said, they'll tell you, pray and pray, live on hay, by and by there'll be pie in the sky when you die.
Yeah,
and that's convenient, isn't it, Alan? You know, don't worry about the fact that you can't feed your children down here. Don't worry about the fact that they can't go to the doctor. They're going to heaven.
Yeah, so we should be content.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, don't rock the boat. Don't make any trouble. Don't get anybody all wrought up or head up or stirred up. Yeah, you be quiet now and you work and when you're done working, yeah, you can just die. And there will be somebody behind you to take your place.
Yeah, religion keeps the working class in order, keeps us happy. We're going to heaven.
Yeah, yeah.
So just be content with our position.
Going to be streets paved with gold, right, Alan?
Yeah. And you were talking about the abortion clinic bombing earlier. Do you remember when the abortion clinic bomb was in Birmingham?
Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah, that was a friend of my father's that got killed in that.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah. My father's conservative, more of a conservative. But I think he's changing his ways, but he was pretty upset about that situation.
Yeah, the one that you mean the abortion clinic bombing that Eric Rudolph perpetrated?
Yeah, and the policeman got killed in that.
Yeah, yeah.
And a nurse got injured. And,
right.
And when Eric Rudolph was convicted, he kind of smiled and he just acted like he was doing God's duty.
Well, he's still writing letters from prison, and he's taunting the victims to this day, and nobody will stop him, Alan.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, we had that story maybe a month or so ago. He is taunting his victims from behind the bars of his jail cell, and the prison officials say, well, we can't really impinge his right to free speech. Yeah, he's got more of a right to free speech because he's religiously insane than I do right here night after night. I have to be careful what we say here because you never know who's going to show up on the doorstep. But if you're religiously insane, you can taunt the people that you tried to kill.
Yeah, he's got more right than those people in Guantanamo Bay.
By a long shot, by a long shot.
Yeah, and also that guy who was convicted for that Bali bomb, and he acted the same way when he was convicted. But he's of a different religion. He thought he was doing such a good deed for God.
Yeah. It's all these people who you know, It's so funny to me. God's omnipotent, all-powerful, made the whole blooming universe, and yet somehow is incapable of manifesting his wants or desires to the rest of us, and instead he has to let some crazy person do it. Some crazy person with a taste for murder.
Yeah. Sound like God is Caligula.
Huh. How about that? Yeah, that's pretty close. That's exactly who the Almighty is in the eyes of fundamentalists, be they Muslim or Christian fundamentalists or whatever they care to call themselves. That's exactly what it is. It's a manifestation of an evil Caligula.
That's right.
Darn, that's a good analogy, Alan.
Yeah, I heard that from I stole that from Michael Parenti.
Oh well, okay, so we come full circle then.
He's a pretty smart fella.
Did you get your truck out of the shop?
Oh, yeah, it's been out of the shop. I'm back home doing some home time. Going to have see my relatives this weekend. Have like a family reunion.
Oh, that'll be nice. Right there around Birmingham?
Yeah. Hey, I got one other thing to ask you about before you let me go.
Oh, okay. Take your time. All in the world.
And the Australian, in the news the other day, the Australian Prime Minister said that oil is security for their country.
Right.
He said Iraqi oil is security for their country.
In fact, our good friend John Fox of All Fox Up, that's on at 10 o'clock every morning Eastern time, it'll be 9 o'clock your time, Alan, he's down in Sydney, and he has been following this for the last couple of days, and the Australian people are just beside themselves to finally hear that. But the funny thing is, he said that, and then the entire political structure around him just imploded and right around him, and they said, well, no, that's not what he meant. I mean, that's not, you know, oil is security. I mean, he didn't mean like oil is security. They are backtracking for all their worth, Alan. It's downright funny.
It sounded like he said Iraqi oil.
He did.
Yeah, that's what our politicians are implying. That's why we're over there, and that's why they keep talking about Venezuela, and that's why they keep talking about Iraq, Iran. We just can't keep. They just can't keep their greedy hands off other people's resources.
Well, even on the 4th of July, when George Bush came here to West Virginia, Alan, we went over a lot of that last night. The audio from that, but I didn't get to the part where I'm trying to find it real quick. He said outright that it's about the oil, because he said, oh, yeah, here it is, talking about the tourists, you know, the tourists. I never can tell if they're terrorists or tourists when he says it. He says, if we were to allow them to gain control of Iraq, they would have control of a nation with massive oil reserves, which they could use to fund new attacks and extort economic blackmail on those who didn't kowtow to their wishes. Well, there's your admission, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's about the oil.
I guess we have a lot of coal. What if somebody says they don't like our politics, so they come over here and steal our coal?
Nah, they're busy terrorizing us all by themselves, Alan. Jeez, it's awful. I tell you. Well, you have yourself a wonderful weekend, all right?
Okay, thanks.
All right, we'll talk to you soon, Alan.
All right.
Bye now. And we're going to, by the way, Alan is a painter. And a fine one at that. And at some point up on the website, I'll go ahead and tell you. Alan has volunteered one of his paintings to stand good in a drawing among those who donate to the Horn, because right now we're, you know, all the money's going to go toward paying our bills, and we really don't have the opportunity to create any swag to give you guys. But Alan, out of the generosity of his heart, is donating one of his paintings, and it's good stuff. I tell you, I was writing back and forth with Alan the other night. You know the cover art on the original version of Derek and the Dominoes, Layla and Other Stories. Now, this isn't to say it looks like that, but the style is reminiscent of that. And it's really, really exquisite. And so we'll put an image of maybe a couple of Allen's paintings up and let you see them. But sometime in the next month or so, after this month is over with, everybody who's donated to the Horn will put their name in a hopper or a basket or a hat or a brown paper bag, whatever, and we'll draw out a name, and we will donate that painting to that person who has donated to keep the Horn on the air. As things progress and things get better off, we'll have more stuff. But I thought you'd like to know that. And I thought it was very, very kind and very decent and very generous of Alan to make that offer. It's a beautiful thing. Because, see, I relish art, and I think you guys do, too. And I thought that might be a nice way of thanking you for the efforts that you have made. It's 26 minutes past the hour, and I'm going to... Before we talked with Alan, this editorial from the Baltimore Sun referenced something. It referenced... what was the phrase? A government that spies upon its citizens, evades the courts, and feels no compulsion to explain itself beyond vague warnings of security threats must be brought into check. Well, you'd like to think so, but this is, after all, America. This is, after all, the Bush administration, or the Cheney administration, the Dick administration. This is Dickmerica. And things don't always work out the way you'd like them to. We've got an example of that. We'll talk about it when we come back from the break. Your last chance before the weekend hits, your last chance before Monday. Get your licks in. 304-658-5912. Light them up. There's only three lines, but I'd like to see them blinking, especially on a Friday. You're listening to America's Liberal Voice. You're listening to The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Saturday evening, July 21st, because at 9 p.m. until midnight Eastern, Billy Shears will be right here on the Head-On Radio Network, The Horn. You're going to just love night sounds. We'll have plenty of great music and more. So, is it a date? We'll be waiting for you, Saturday night, July 21st. Be there.
And again, I was talking about the Republican debate. So we'll get to the point where we're going to drag a terrorist out to the stage with the Republicans, and they're all going to take turns kicking him in the nuts and see who the audience cheers for the most. That's going to determine who's going to be the Republican candidate. And that's what they are. Kick him in the nuts. How do they do that on South Park? Rochambeau. They're going to Rochambeau the terrorists.
Come on, rub my nipples while I torture this little piggy.
No, that sounds pretty sweet to me.
The Cup of Joe radio show with your host, Joe Vecchio, the working man's thinking man. Moving to 11 a.m. to noon, June 18th. right here on America's Liberal Voice, the Head On Radio Network.
Mr. Hello? Gore.
Hey, Al.
Excuse me, sir. Mr. Gore.
Hello?
Hey, Al. This is the Vice President.
Mr. Gore, we need you for president.
We deserve a president we can respect.
We deserve a president we can respect. Who has experience.
And compassion.
Who is the most qualified.
Who is a proven leader.
Al Gore. Right on Iraq. Right on global warming. Right for the 21st century.
Join us at DraftGore.com and supporting Al Gore for the Democratic nomination for president.
Sign the petition at DraftGore.com.
Paid for by the committee to draft Gore. He won once. He can win again.
The whole world's coming to an end, Mal.
I see angels, Mickey. They're coming down for us from heaven. And I see you riding a big red horse. And you're driving the horses, whipping them. And they're spitting and frothing all on them out. And they're coming right at us. And I see the future.
I love you, man.
I know you do, baby. I've loved you since the day we met. And it was a
little hard. That just gives you the cold shivers, doesn't it? Little conversations that take place in fundy organizations all over the country, all the time. I just wanna bomb the abortion clinic for you, baby. I love you, mother. Getting back to what I mentioned earlier, the reference A from the Baltimore Sun editorial. Liberty is the source of security. An open, accountable government is the best protection against tyranny and incompetence. And, of course, sweeping federal measures, most of them heavily cloaked in secrecy, have robbed Americans of privacy, due process of law, even freedom of movement. Warrantless wiretaps, email surveillance, national security letters secretly demanding information on thousands of citizens, and soon to come the equivalent of national ID cards, all would be abominations to Jefferson. So would then the Circuit Court of Appeals in Cincinnati. Because today, there in Cincinnati, the U.S. Appeals Court dismissed a lawsuit challenging George Bush's domestic spying program. Just dismissed it. Which case was this? I'll tell you which case this was. You remember this case because we were proud of the trial court judge who issued the opinion in this case. It was a case that was filed in Detroit. And the U.S. District Court ruled almost a year ago, August of 2006, that the domestic spying program violated the Constitution outright, as well as the 1978 FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, that prohibited surveillance of U.S. citizens on U.S. soil without the approval of the Special Surveillance Court. Both of those were no-brainers. And in that opinion, the trial judge, the federal district judge for that particular district of Michigan, wrote that George Bush is not a king. This is that case, and you remember it well, I'm sure. That case has been dismissed. It hasn't been remanded to the trial court for further proceedings consistent with a ruling on procedural or substantive law. It has been dismissed. It has been made to go away. It has been taken out back behind the shed and killed. Taken out back behind the shed in the dark and still of the night under a sickle moon and had its throat slit. Because, you see, it was a 2-1 vote on the Circuit Court of Appeals there in Cincinnati that went straight down party lines. Republicans and Bush appointees, two of those, versus one person, one judge, one appeals court judge who is decent, who has some regard for the Constitution of the United States of America, who is somewhat of a patriot. Appellate Judge Ronald Lee Gilman was the lone dissenter in the case in the 2-1 decision. He said he would uphold the ruling on the grounds that the program violated the federal intelligence, Federal International Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, FISA, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act of 1978. So there you have it. One bold, brave, patriotic federal district judge in Michigan has the courage to stand in the face of the juggernaut, the fascistic juggernaut of the Bush administration and say, stop! And one lone dissenting appeals court judge agrees. But the hand-picked and hand-placed and cowardly, cravenly confirmed, the cravenly confirmed appeals court judges said, nope, forget it, you ever saw it, this is over, this doesn't exist, because you see, what they ruled is that the people who brought the case, the plaintiffs, if you will, who brought the case, did not have any legal right to bring it. This appeals panel in Cincinnati ruled that the American Civil Liberties Union needed to sit down and shut up and be happy little citizens of the Reich like the rest of us. God! Do you have any doubt left? Do you wonder at all? Is there any uncertainty left in your mind that the Constitution, as it was envisioned by the likes of James Madison, is dead? That its Bill of Rights is nothing more than a life support system for the religion industry and the gun industry? Is there any doubt left in your mind? It is dead, people! It's gone! It's over! I know there are those who would quote Mr. Jefferson and say, no, it is only sleeping. But there is, ask any medical professional, a point where sleep crosses over into coma, and coma crosses silently and quietly into death. And I fear, oh God, I fear that we are at that place. Because no matter how many times that Keith Olbermann gets in front of the camera, handsome, erudite, well-spoken, and coolly and rationally demands that George Bush and Dick Cheney resign from office, no matter how many times that happens, no matter how many times he does that, they aren't leaving. They might leave. on January 20th, 2009, but they will not leave before they have completely wrecked the entire frame of our system of governance. Don't think that I take any joy in this. I want to come on the air some evening and just we're going to laugh and carry on and tell jokes. And dude walks into a bar and says, you understand? But we can't do that right now because it's all hollow. It's all unreal. It's all heartbreak. It's all circuit courts in Cincinnati that just make cases challenging illegal spying on the American people. Just, oh, no, I'm sorry. We're not going to reach the issue of whether or not that's legal or constitutional because you don't have a right to be in this court. You know what? A free society that allows more people into court than it excludes has a chance of persisting as free. A society, however, that seeks to find different ways to foreclose access to the court system is a society that is not free, nor will it long be if it is. Let's go to the phones. Our good friend Kate calls from Arizona. Hey, Kate, welcome to the program.
Hey, I'm going to go from the court to the homeless shelter. I'm standing out in the heat, so if we get dumped by Verizon, I'll just forget it.
Okay.
The homeless shelters, sometimes I spent some time on the street, and sometimes the places that you have to sing for your supper and pray, the soup's really good, and they have homemade bread. So, you can't say everything bad about.
Oh, no. Listen, I grew up in the Southern Baptist Church, Kate. There, I lived for Wednesday evenings and fellowship supper because those wonderful Southern ladies were going to make dinner, and I mean there was some fine eating, and you did sing for your supper.
Yeah, you did. Anyway, back to that book and that, and how they or whatever. We're having a homeless drive here. Sean Ryan at Nova M has a homeless drive, and they're gathering up hats and sunscreen and glasses.
I know, and what a noble undertaking that is.
Yeah. And since I live so far from town, whenever I'm close to a 99-cent store, I just go in and gather up everything that I can and put it in a box and UPS it to him. And he and Sarge take the stuff out to the folks. Well, my first box that I sent, I couldn't put hats in it because it's too big. So I found sanitary napkins and condoms and nail clippers and nail files and little things like that. That I lived in my van for 5 years, and so I knew things that you just can't afford, So I just put everything in the box and didn't think anything of it. And I told Sean this might come in handy for somebody. And he said when he got the stuff out into the street, the little sisters were just ecstatic. Thank you for everything, and especially the condoms. I'm going to put condoms on the list on the webpage. And then the Saturday crew who comes in and does their live shows and stuff, they read his homeless, they do the promo for him. You'd be surprised at the people who can't say condoms. I mean, you wouldn't be. I just laughed. Those people.
You mean that, and we need water, and we need sunscreen, and we need lip balms, and we need...
Yeah, but one person said, and he got to the end of the list, and he said, and water. I said, oh, my goodness sakes, it didn't even dawn on me. So anyway, it's sort of like what Clinton did for oral sex. I mean, now people on Nova M are saying condoms, and so it's very cool.
Condom, 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 condom.
And then never mind. Anyway, I'm gonna hang up here before I get dumped by Verizon. But
fine folks, Verizon.
Hey, what? Yeah, they are, but I don't. I'm in cell tower hell out here. What's the name of the title? What's the title and the author of the science fiction book you mentioned on the air yesterday or the day before?
Oh, the title is Where Late the Sweet Birds Sang.
Okay. You don't know by whom.
Author, I'll have to look. I'll bet you one of the gang in the chat room will have it for me in a matter of seconds.
Well, I'll get out of the heat and go look at my computer. I have a little bitty speaker on my laptop, so I can't hear everything, so that's why I missed the title. So anyway, y'all take care, and I'll talk to you again.
All right, you take care.
Thanks.
Kate. Oh, wait, what?
Yeah.
Kate Wilhelm. Another Kate. Kate Wilhelm.
I know her stuff. Okay, I'll go drag it out of the library then. Okay, thanks.
All right.
For the time.
Oh, take my
care.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that is, that was your doing, Agnes?
Yes.
You know how to work the Google?
I know how to work the Google. Thank you.
Obviously, no Agnes has been left behind in America.
Fight me.
Barrett, honey. pardon me. There we go. 15 minutes before the hour. And Agnes says I'm ready for a break. And when Agnes says I'm ready for a break, I'm ready for a break. Crank up some fine and funky bumper music, dear.
Some fine and funky?
Mm-hmm. Let her rip. Yeah, that works. So it's 14 minutes before the hour. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. And keep plowing away on this Friday night edition of Head On. You know the phone number, 304-658-5912. This is America's liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Claude, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4, all you have to do is believe. And believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
You can see that in Alberta, diversity is very strong. You see people from different places, from different backgrounds, and we all have learned to live together. That's why Alberta is a great place to live.
We come from different places, and we have to accept each other because our backgrounds are different, our cultures are different, and we have to understand other people.
I think that our community, being as open as it is, just gives people a chance to really enjoy interaction between different cultures and really get to know each other without making any judgments.
Trabajando juntos podemos lograr la gran diferencia en la comunidad. That it means by working together, we can make a big difference in our community.
To find out how you can make a difference, visit HelpMakeADifference.com. This message is brought to you by the Government of Alberta and Global Television.
Ten before the hour, and we roll up toward the news with this little morsel. Now, we had the story of Mr. McMenemy. Had to practice that one before I ever came on the air with the story. That's why it took me 5 days to bring it to you. David McMenemy, who thought he was ramming his car into an abortion clinic, but it turns out it's just a place where poor women to go to get their fetuses cared for. But, you know, being a fundamentalist and being a Christian, he was entirely too stupid to recognize that fact. Now, this little morsel I caught the other day, and again, not even so much as a boop on the national radar screen. It comes from CNN. This is what it says. Headline: Very crude device goes off in remote area of Walt Disney World. No one hurt. What was described as a, quote, very crude, homemade, low-level device, unquote, exploded in a trash container in a remote parking lot area of Walt Disney World early Monday, Orange County, Florida Sheriff Kevin Beery said. He said Disney employees heard the blast, but added that no one was nearby and there were no injuries. He said there had been no evacuations at the park. The blast went off just after midnight at the parking lot in the downtown Disney area. Disney employees heard a loud noise and saw smoke coming out of the dumpster-type trash container. Beery said a small fire in the container was quickly extinguished. The story goes on to mention that they found the ends of the thing, which would indicate that it was a poorly fashioned pipe bomb. Now, here it is, early July 2007. We know that fundamentalists like Timothy McVeigh and David Koresh have caused massive death, misery, and anguish. We know that David McMenemy was willing to kill for Jesus. And we know that above all, one of the places that the fundies hate the most is Disney World. Now, this was crudely fashioned. It was a pipe bomb, according to the reports. And what you have to ask yourself, I mean, go ahead, let's play Joe Friday on this one. What you have to ask yourself is, who would bomb the happiest place on earth? Who would bomb a place where children go? Al-Qaeda? Mm-mm. Some Iraqi doctor? No. No, that doesn't work either. That doesn't fit the pattern. Who puts out action alerts about Disney supporting the homosexuals? Who puts out calls for boycotts against Disney because they sponsor them gay days? And it's an abomination unto the nostrils of the Almighty. Hallelujah, praise Jesus. Who does that? Huh? Who blows up women's health care clinics in the rural and or in the deep south? Who does that? Who gets caught with stockpiles of the makings of cyanide bombs in Texas? Who does that? You know the answer. Who gets arrested after serial killing sprees? And what organization did they serve high up in? Dennis Rader, the BTK killer, who was one of the higher ups in his church in Kansas. Who gets busted for kiddie porn on their computer and is at the same time your friendly, happy, happening afternoon drive time host on Jesus Radio in Nashville? Who does that? Al-Qaeda? The Muslim Brotherhood? The World Association of Muslim Youth? Osama bin Laden? You know the answer. Sure you do. Right-wing, fundamentalist, reconstructionist, dominionist Christians. Every last thing that I just mentioned was perpetrated in the United States by a fundamentalist Christian. Mm-hmm. Now, very crude device goes off in remote area of Walt Disney World. Reckon we can make it blow up, Brother Eustace? I reckon so, Brother Homer. Well, let's try a trial run before we start killing the Homer sectionals real good. Let's just blow up a dumpster. Oh, there's more. I got another story coming out of the top of the hour. I'm not done. I don't just do stuff. I don't just make stuff up. There is a, we've done this discussion before on this program. There is a terrorist threat in the United States, but it is not from any Muslim. It is from a segment of this society that operates outside the scope of law, with the imprimatur of constitutional protection and a freedom from ever having to pay any of its income into the public coffers. You want to find the killers? I suggest you get up on a Sunday morning and go looking for them, because you'll find them. This is the Head On Radio Network. It's time for the news. Light them up. It's 304-658-5912. 304-658-5912. I'm Bob Kincaid. I'm packed and I'm holding. I'm smiling. She lives and she goes and she lives for me. Said she lives for me. Ovation. Who won't motivation? She comes out and she goes down to me.
This is a quality news network. A 27-year-old Iraqi doctor is now the first person charged in the botched UK car bombings. Scotland Yard announced Bilal Abdullah has been charged in both the London and Glasgow attacks. If convicted, he could face life in prison. Seven other suspects in custody have not yet been charged. The FBI says two of those suspects had looked for work in the U.S. Both are doctors. Within the last year, each contacted a U.S. agency for foreign medical graduates seeking employment. A federal appeals court dismissed a lawsuit challenging President Bush's domestic spying program. The court ruled the plaintiffs had no standing to sue the government. U.S. diplomats abroad have been forced to curtail their activities due to security concerns. Heightened security restrictions have been implemented at embassies and consulates in 28 nations. The commander of the multinational division center in Iraq warned that if surge forces are withdrawn too soon, there would be serious setbacks in that country. Meanwhile, Republican Senator Pete Domenici of New Mexico is the latest member of the GOP to break with the president's policy on Iraq. He said the U.S. cannot continue asking troops to sacrifice indefinitely while the Iraq government is making no measurable progress. A Navy investigation into the killing of 10 unarmed Iraqi civilians was sparked by a job applicant's polygraph test. That job applicant was a former Marine applying for a position with the U.S. Secret Service. Off-duty police officers and bystanders tackled a gunman who walked into the New York casino in Las Vegas and started firing. At least four people were wounded. Pakistani President Pervez Musharraf's plane was reportedly fired on as it took off from a Pakistan airport earlier today. That's according to an intelligence officer. Government officials, however, deny the attack took place. The FBI is investigating handwritten letters sent to 20 U.S. newspapers which threatened the Goldman Sachs investment firm. The number of illegal immigrants arrested at the U.S.-Mexico border has decreased by 24% over the last 9 months. Border Patrol agents attribute the decline to an additional 6,000 National Guard troops posted along the border. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up after this.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
A new study by the National Obesity Forum says 80% of people don't know that carrying extra weight around their abdomen is a serious health risk. People in 27 countries didn't realize that tummy increases their risk of type 2 diabetes and heart disease. Burger King announced by the end of next year it will stop using oil with trans fats. It's following Starbucks, Taco Bell, and KFC in that decision. And Iran says it will no longer produce cars that run purely on gasoline. In 2 weeks' time, all cars will be made with dual-fuel capabilities. Though Iran's a major oil producer, it imports 40% of its costly petroleum because it lacks refining capacity. Boeing is set to unveil its 787 Dreamliner jet Sunday. The company's already pre-sold 642 of the new mid-size luxury planes, even before the first one was put together. The jet is made mostly of a carbon fiber instead of aluminum, making it lighter and more stable. Job growth for June in the U.S. was better than expected. Employers added 132,000 jobs. Light sweet crude oil is trading at $72.81 a barrel. At the close of Wall Street, the Dow was up 46 points. The NASDAQ was up 10 and the S&P was up 5. There's more at our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com. I'm Laurel Krissen.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now.
1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Five past the hour, and you heard brief mention of where I'm going next in the QNN Top of the Hour news. You know, sometimes we pull the curtain back a little bit on how some of this works. And different people behind their various and sundry different microphones operate in different fashions. The nature of the way that the teaching and training that I had through the long, grand, wandering web of the accident that is my life, and by I mean nothing negative about that, but, you know, very few of us live intentional lives. Very few of us, I mean, I think back to, bless her heart, Mrs. Kim, when we'd knock on the door and we were 5 and 6 years old. Mrs. Kim, can Eddie come out and play? And they had recently come from Korea, and they were highly motivated. And at 6 years old, our buddy would be standing there back behind his mama, and she'd say, "No, he no come out and play. He be doctor." And the door would close, and we'd go off and play, and he wouldn't, and he's a doctor. But very few of us live lives that are that intentional, single-minded, laser-beam-focused. So along the way, I've had a little of this and a little of that, a little art history, a little poetry, a little journalism, a little photography, a little theater, a little classics, a little Latin. Sadly, no Greek. Even a little mathematics, a little biology, a little chemistry. It's been a smorgasbord. And so a big part of that, of course, was fooling around in various and sundry community theaters and college theater groups and college theater departments and the like, and fooling around with the concept of improv. So for the most part, when you tune in, You're gonna hear me operate without a net. In other words, letting it happen as my brain connects to my mouth. Other people don't do that. Other people script. To one degree or another, some people will get behind the microphone and have everything that they want to say completely written out in advance. And their goal is to make you think that they're not reading. Some people will just put together a plot outline of where they want to go. Others will let it sort of take an organic course and develop as it will along the way. And I think that last is what I prefer, because you get a sense for the way, because it's watching the individual strands of the spider webs light up in the moonlight, if you will, and the way the light catches the dew on the strands, and you realize how they connect. So we've gone from a Baltimore Sun editorial. Well, back up. We've gone from a press release pitch imploring that we do not give money or money to the homeless because they might buy alcohol with it. We've gone from that to a Baltimore Sun editorial that implores us to take back our country, when in point of fact, the fourth estate in this country, by laying on its lazy ass for year after year after long tortured year, contributed to the sorry state of affairs that we're in now. You do remember, of course, that the New York Times had the story of the illegal wiretapping, the illegal domestic spying in this country before the 2004 election, but sat on it just to make sure that we all did like we were supposed to, and sat still while another election was stolen. We had that. We have a story of a man, a domestic terrorist, who tried to blow up what he thought was an abortion clinic, but turned out to be a clinic that was there to actually save babies who were going to be born. We had that. We've got domestic terrorism in a small form in Walt Disney World, the happiest place on earth. Where are you going, Bob? Not Disney World! And now we come to this. In an America that is threatened from all sides by religious fundamentalist terrorism, and I do not mean Muslim terrorism, I mean terrorism perpetrated by the followers of Dobson and Robertson and that now mercifully dead Falwell. We are threatened on all sides by that crowd, thinking that they are operating in the name of God. Finally, we come to this story. The FBI is investigating letters sent to newspapers nationwide that say, quote, Goldman Sachs, hundreds will die. We are inside. You cannot stop us. Oddly enough, government and company officials are downplaying the threat. Goldman Sachs. Wonder why Goldman Sachs. Reckon, we'll save that speculation for another show. We take these things very seriously, said FBI spokesman Bill Carter. But then he added, we have no specific and credible information about a credible threat to Goldman Sachs other than these letters. No, okay, we're not going to... No, we will go ahead and speculate. Why Goldman Sachs? Why Goldman Sachs? Well, before you speculate why Goldman Sachs, you have to speculate as to who's doing this. And we'll get to that. The threat is unique in terms of specifically targeting Goldman employees. A year ago, there were threats against a number of U.S. banks. A written statement from Goldman Sachs says, we have a broad range of security measures in place to counter all likely threats, and we're monitoring the situation closely. The FBI does not yet know who mailed the letters, according to CNN. And the letters were signed... God. Now, if you go to the CNNmoney.com website and you look Goldman Sachs targeted with death threats, you can see an image of the letters. Hand-printed on lined paper... You know, just like the letters that Robert Byrd said were sent to him advocating the confirmation of Samuel Alito. Real letters written by real people on line stationery. And they skip lines between, you know, just like a good second grader. It's all caps. Goldman Sachs. Hundreds will die. We are inside. You cannot stop us. And then it's signed A... Q U S A. FBI profilers are busily trying to decipher what A Q U S A might possibly mean. No, I made that part up. They're trying... I love this paragraph. Authorities are working with Goldman Sachs to identify possible suspects, including disgruntled former or current employees or angry investment clients. Postal Inspection Service spokesperson Tom Boyle said that to Chicken Noodle News. Postal Inspection Service spokesperson Tom Boyle also said, Goldman has been very cooperative. All the letters were postmarked June the 27th. And they were sent to some, what would at first blush be some bizarre looking places. They were sent to the Fort Wayne, Indiana Journal-Gazette, the New Jersey Star Ledger, the Idaho Statesman, the Caller Times of Corpus Christi, Texas, and the Knoxville News Sentinel in Tennessee. Asked if investigators have an idea on why the letters were mailed to those newspapers, Mr. Boyle said, quote, "We're trying to figure it out ourselves. Usually you'd think they would send it to the New York Times or L.A. Times." You know what? I don't know how much they're paying Mr. Boyle, but they're not getting their money's worth. Here, let me do this for you for free. Tom, buddy, never met you, but you'll thank me later. The reason these letters were sent to Fort Wayne, Indiana, Corpus Christi, Texas, some godforsaken place in Idaho, and Knoxville, Tennessee, is the same reason that there was a pamphlet in 2004 showing John Kerry putting a knife through a Bible that was sent by the Republican National Committee only to West Virginia and Arkansas, the two places in this once great nation where they thought people were stupid enough to believe that a political candidate for the office of the presidency would come and get your individual Bible. Now, these letters, hand-printed, Goldman Sachs, hundreds will die. We are inside. You cannot stop us. Signed, AQUSA. These letters were not sent by Al-Qaeda USA. And I'm proud to live in America where Al-Qaeda is so free. No, sorry. No. These letters were sent to Knoxville, Tennessee, and Idaho, and because remember, Knoxville, Tennessee is in the east end of Tennessee, and as our good friend Luke will attest, that is the most virulent right-wing Republican portion of that incredibly wide state. Idaho? Idaho? Bueller? Bueller? No, you know Idaho. Fort Wayne, Indiana? You know, like I said, I understand why Indiana people are mostly Republicans, because they can't get a decent night's sleep. So dadgum flat, the sun just, and it's 4 o'clock in the morning. Oh, hell, I got to get up now. But again, Indiana can't swing a dead cat without hitting a conservative Republican. Tennessee, same thing. Idaho, same thing. Corpus Christi, Texas, same thing. Jersey? I don't know which part of Jersey this was sent to. But I'm guessing that paper serves, again, a conservative readership. God, I'm surprised they didn't send it to the Beckley Register Herald. God, don't give them any ideas, Bob. Why, though? Why? Because that's where there are still people in America who will believe this terrorism BS. That's where it'll get traction. Have the letters been tested for anthrax? Apparently. You remember anthrax? The anthrax killer that we never really bothered to try to catch because he was only trying to kill liberals and progressives or people that were perceived to be that way. And a week before the anthrax attacks even took place, George Bush and Dick Cheney and a lot of them were already on Cipro. Now, that's not tinfoil hat stuff. That's real. That was announced. It was, I mean, you know, my God, it was in the news. Welcome to America. Welcome to a place where the idea of a false flag is a statement that is now almost redundant. False flag. Come on, let's do Tom Boyle's job for him. Who benefits from an increased level of terror in the United States? Who benefits from threats to a major banking house such as Goldman Sachs? Oh, this is irresponsible speculation, Bob. Well, you know, that's how real criminal investigations take place, as you sit and you try to, you know, profile your way into the mind of the person doing the threatening. All these things were mailed from Queens. What do you think? Is Goldman Sachs about to be attacked? No, but telling people in red state, walk on your knuckles, breathe through your mouth land that it is, might be enough to create sufficient panic to do Goldman Sachs harm. It would be kind of fun to be in a position where you could go and investigate whether any monkey business had taken place with regard to stock transactions touching upon Goldman Sachs. The bank has 46 offices in 46 cities around the world, staffed by about 28,000 employees worldwide. There are 9,000 Goldman Sachs employees in New York City, another 3,000 in New Jersey. Article really does kind of fail to address the issue of whether or not there are any Goldman Sachs employees in Corpus Christi, Texas, who knows where, Idaho, Fort Wayne, Indiana, or Knoxville, Tennessee. AQUSA. My aching back. AQUSA. Oh, that's supposed to be the part where we figure out that they mean Al-Qaeda. Jiminy Christmas. So, you know, that's where we are on a Friday, the end of the first full week of July. Be afraid, America. Be very afraid. Stepping out your door might be lethal. Al-Qaeda USA is after your bond rating, capitalist, corporatist America. Fear, 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 fear. Again, be afraid that they're going to get Goldman Sachs. And don't, for the love of Christ, look over at Pakistan that is about to blow up in a great big old fundamentalist fireball. And the next thing you know, people who think Osama bin Laden's a pretty cool guy are going to have their hands on a nuclear arsenal. Wonder how Israel's responding to that. I bet they're paying attention. Shoo. Mother. But we're not done. We're not done. I got another one in the stack that you're just going to love to pieces. That also harkens back to that Baltimore Sun editorial. It's the veritable music of the spheres, isn't it? 23 past the hour, and we'll take a quick break. Maybe check out news from the Workers' Independent News Service. They do fine work there. This is the Head On Radio Network. This is the Horn. Look, get involved if you want to. I'm Bob Kincaid. We'll be right back.
As I understand the conflict right now between the president's bill and the one supported by the Democrats, John McCain and Lindsey Graham, is that John McCain and Lindsey Graham and the Democrats say that the bill, the standards we use, should be the standards that are the same as the treaty we signed, the Geneva Convention signed after World War II that every civilized nation follows. And the president is saying, that restricts me too much. That's too humane. I want to be able to do other things. I won't say what they are, but sources tell us that things like waterboarding, you know, drowning people, putting them in 50-degree weather. And the question, I think, is should we hold the United States to the same standards that England holds itself to, that Canada holds itself to, that other civilized nations hold themselves to?
Get the view from inside the Beltway with Mark Levine on the Radio Inside Scoop right here, 2 to 3 p.m. weekdays on the Head On Radio Network.
You're listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. Some 45,000 workers at Dana Corporation could soon learn what their future holds, as a bankruptcy court ruling is expected as soon as today. The United Steelworkers and United Auto Workers joined the company in asking the bankruptcy judge to delay the ruling, which had been scheduled for earlier this week. Dana wants to cut wages and benefits by $180 million a year, dump its retiree health care obligations, and slice hundreds of millions of dollars a year more in costs from its operation to emerge from bankruptcy. The unions are reportedly close to a deal with the Toledo-based auto parts maker that would head off the bankruptcy court destruction of its union contracts. The USW and UAW deal with Dana would allegedly create a two-tier wage system, protecting current workers from cuts but paying new hires $4 to $7 an hour less. Also reportedly on the table, Dana paying the unions $700 million to establish a retiree health care trust fund so Dana can shirk its responsibility to retirees. The unions would take over that obligation with the goal of protecting retirees from health care cuts. Under this deal, pensions would also be frozen. The bankruptcy court would have to approve whatever arrangement is reached by the company and the unions. If you're a union auto worker and you're injured on the job, the protections that you have are much better than if you were at the total mercy of the boss. Workers at Toyota's Georgetown, Kentucky plant say that injured workers there are often just cast aside by a callous company that uses them. It essentially throws them away when they get hurt on the job. John Williams has 18 years seniority at the Toyota plant. He would like to see workers there represented by a union, and he's active in efforts to eventually get Toyota workers to join the UAW.
The people who are let go because they're no longer useful to Toyota, that's one of the biggest problems that, you know, I face myself as a worker at Toyota, is what happens to me when I become injured.
Williams says, according to OSHA records, more than 9,000 workers were hurt at Toyota's Georgetown, Kentucky plant between 1996 and 2002. 1,800 of them are no longer at Toyota, while more and more temporary workers are being used. Williams and other workers at the plant have formed an organizing committee, and he says that more workers are joining the effort to get UAW representation. He says he and the other pro-union workers are in this effort for the long haul. The U.S. healthcare industry often claims the U.S. system is the best in the world. One thing they often cite is allegedly long waiting times for some care in countries that have universal national health care. But the California Nurses Association says a Commonwealth Fund study of the U.S. and five industrialized nations that have national health care found U.S. waiting times longer than any nation except Canada. You've been listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org. Doug Cunningham, Workers Independent News.
Past the final hour of this Friday night edition of Head On, I'm Bob Kincaid, and I'm glad to be sharing the ride into the weekend with you. Program note, I'm pretty sure, Oh, well, that's definitive. There's a strong chance there will not be a head-on program on Tuesday evening, the 10th. I'm hoping to go down to a place called Caford Mountain for a gathering of some fine, fine folks who are fighting to end mountaintop removal. And maybe talk to some folks, interview some folks, get some recordings, that kind of thing. Agnes, however, I'll take the kids with me. Agnes will be here chained like the Roman galley slave of yore to the mixing board. Stroke! Stroke, Agnes, stroke!
Right there.
Hard to starboard.
Maybe I'll do your show.
Hard to port. No, you won't.
You won't be.
At any rate, so there's your... Everything will be normal on Tuesday except me, and I never am anyway. So, yes, dear?
It will be pirate radio. Yeah. Agnes will do Bob's show.
Okie dokie. I'll have to go through that week-long, angst-ridden thing where I realize that everybody loves Agnes more than me. Again. Okay, to the phones. Bob is calling from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, welcome to the program.
Hey, I have to say to you that I am here, but I'm not all there, you know?
Sounds like my life.
Yeah, and it sounds... But I have to say this to you. Don't you ever call Agnes a Roman galley slave.
No, that's what we are, man.
Don't you ever call her that, because she is the queen. And
no, that's her... Dude, that's her own term.
I think you are the king of that castle that you hope you have, and I just had to, I can't go out this weekend without saying to the nation and to the world, I do not wish for insurrection. I do not even think I should get involved in an insurrection. But if they bring it, then like Mike Malloy says, bring it. Does he not? He says, hey, bring it. And if that's what they want, then that's what they get. I'm not asking anyone. I wish more than anything else, Bob, to be like the Cathars, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Of ancient times, back in the day when they were true Christians, not these fake Christians we have today. I would love to know this Jesus. I would love to know him. He sounds like a man that I could sit down and have a sup of wine with, you know?
Mm-hmm.
He sounds, you know, this, you call him,
Yeshua the brown-skinned Palestinian carpenter?
Yeshua the brown-skinned... I could sit down with him and have a cup of tea or a glass of wine and speak with him man-to-man and human to human, and say to him, yes, you have wonderful ideas. Shall we live together as brethren, or shall we live together as enemies? Should I hate you and fear you, or should I embrace you?
The thing that I try over and over again is, and by calling him that, Bob, everybody knows, and you know, and I know, I'm trying to draw a distinction between who he was and who these people think he was.
Absolutely.
When I'm getting pitches in my email for interviews in which people are in which people who are say that they are Christians are going to say, do not give money to the poor, the homeless, the needy, the dirty, the thirsty, the whatever. Don't give them money because they might not spend the money the way you like it.
Dang, they might have a doggone good Cabernet Sauvignon, right?
Or a bottle of Thunderbird with the screw top on.
No, I'd go for the latter. No, Bob, stop and think about it just for a moment. In your humanity, these. The poor, the wretched, the underclass, or this misrepresented majority of humanity, China or to Taiwan or to, oh my God, may Buddha save you, go to India and see this misrepresented majority of humanity. Then you could look in the mirror in the morning and see yourself. That's the truth. You are misrepresented. No one cares about you or me other than those that I know on the head-on network have made some kind of icon out of me, and I hate the idea of being one of them icons. I'm nothing like that. I am a warrior, Bob. I told you that last night. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to go to war. If they want me to take me there, I will go there, but I don't want to go back. I didn't like it the first time, or the second time, or the third time. I didn't like it like these boys are going back for the fourth and fifth and sixth. What was this thing that Bush said?
One dude going back for his eighth tour.
Yeah, his eighth tour. Yeah. You know, you go into hell too many times and you come out a demon, and everybody demonizes you. You go to the store, people look at you like you're something strange because what's wrong with this guy, you know? These my brethren, these sorry sons of...
Well, what's going to... Tell me, Bob, tell me something.
What?
This guy that's gone for eight tours, what's his life going to be 5 years from now, assuming that he has a life 5 years from now?
Bob, I've had to live with that and deal with that.
That's why I'm asking you, Bob, because it's real-time evidence that you can give, real-time testimony.
The only thing I can tell you is this. You are not respected. You will never be respected by the people that wave the flags and tell you, oh, gee, yes, I support the troops. They don't support you for nothing. You can't find it from your mother. You can't find it from your father. You can't find it from your sister or your brother, because they will never know you again. And they will be like I am. I lost my father. He passed. You lost yours. At least you had him for that time. I didn't. I was ostracized by my whole community, everyone in that community.
What will happen? I mean, and we're talking about one guy who's done eight tours, but it doesn't matter whether it's one tour, two tours, or a dozen. The point I'm trying to get at, Bob, is that we have not begun, you know, you're absolutely right, that the people with their yellow ribbon magnets made in China on the back of their SUVs that are built in Mexico, we support the troops. They have no concept of what, they think they're supporting the troops because they're rah-rahing the war, okay?
Yeah.
But the real idea of supporting the troops is something that happens when, you're supporting the troops when you're trying to get them home, and once they are home, then the real meaning of supporting the troops kicks in. And what I'm trying to ask you, Bob, and I don't want you to go anywhere you don't want to go, but what I'm trying to ask you is, what will it mean? What does it mean to support the troops when they get home, when they can't sleep through the night, when a swarthy-faced taxi cab driver scares the life out of them? What does support the troops mean, Bob?
Don't spit on my face when I am down and out and living on the street in a goddamn cardboard box under the bridge down by the goddamn river. Do not spit in my face, and don't tell me that I'm not an American, because you are not an American. I fought for your goddamn country. Did you fight for it? No. You sent me to do it for you, and now you turn your back on me like your goddamn president, this piece of crap, George Bush. Now you crap on me? All of you sitting and squatting in your little white houses, or your little pink houses, or your little... What was that song way back in the day?
Little pink houses, know? Sure, yeah, John Mellencamp.
Little tacky little houses up on the hillside. You're all sitting on the hillside, and you're squatting, and you're pooping, and you're wiping your butts with my face, and you just crap on it.
Well, I mean, now, those are all very graphic terms, Bob, but the fact of the matter is that's what's going to happen. That's what's already happening. We're
it's
seeing
it. Happened back in my day, Bob.
Yeah, and it's going to happen again because
it's
we do not.
It's already happened.
Yeah.
See, Bob, it's already happened. You don't even recognize their coffins coming home. You don't see those boys going into the ground like I do every day. I feel it. You don't. I know. And I know every time they say there's 10 or 12 or 13 or 15 or 100 or 100,000 young, able-bodied American boys and girls being slaughtered. It doesn't matter if it's 1 or 3,000, 5,000.
Oh, I ran across a news story today, Bob. Or not a news story, but a query, I guess,
well,
on one of the blogs.
This.
Well, okay, go ahead.
Ask me this, okay?
Mm-hmm.
You hear about the 3,500, 3,600, 3,700, 4,000, 5,000. You hear about the dead bodies occasionally. Think about this. The 25, the 35, the 45,000 that came back maimed and crippled. And think about that. And think about this. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Every day of this week, every day of this month, every day of this last 6 years, I have thought about this disgusting crap that has been foisted on me, and I have to live with it, Bob. I have to die with it. I have seen my brothers die horribly, miserably, and without their mothers, and I've heard them cry their mothers' names and cry out for them. And I've had to bag them and tag them and send them home.
Okay, Bob, hold on a minute. I've got something here. Our good friend Wayne wants to jump into this conversation. Hey, Wayne, hey. You there?
Hey, man, yeah, I'm here.
You there, Bob?
Hey, Wayne.
Hi, Gunny, how you doing?
How you doing, my friend? I've heard your voice so many times on this network, and I thought, there's a man, and I appreciate him, I respect him, and I think of him as a brother, and thank you for allowing me to speak to you.
Oh, no thanks necessary, man. I ain't no different than anybody else. I am a brother. I'm just like you or anybody else or any of the kids that are over there.
I know.
It's a sad thing that we've let this government do what they've done, and, you know, they are to blame. And, of course, we have to accept that responsibility, too, because we have allowed them to do it.
Yeah. And we are also to blame. Wait, we are.
I thought
the American
I just said
people.
That's, you know, we but are
every,
to blame.
Every red-blooded American is to blame. I sat down. I didn't think this Bush thing would go this far. I didn't think it could go this far. But it has. Tearing this nation apart, but it isn't tearing us apart, is it?
Well, no, it isn't, you know, but it's, you know, you have to stop and look at their long-range plan. And, you know, well, as Bob has said many times, after Goldwater lost, they decided to take over the media, which they have done. And with the media, they have learned, you know, how to control people, how to make people pay attention to something else so that they don't pay attention to what they're doing. And,
Wayne, let me ask a question.
They've done very good at that.
Wayne, do you remember that campaign with Goldwater? Do you remember Goldwater in the campaign?
I'm 62 years old, Bob.
Do you remember the Daisy commercial?
Yes, I do.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Yeah?
Yep.
Yeah. I remember it clearly, you know, and that is the big one, because that's what they said. Goldwater, he's ready to push the button, right?
Right. Well, exactly. And, you know, that's, I mean, you know, Democrats were up on him then, man. They knew how to get to it, and, you know, that's what really pissed them off.
That Daisy commercial. You remember
that's
that
one. That's what set out
their,
campaign.
Yeah. But see, the thing is, that's why I stood and I fought and I thought, God, I got to get into this damn thing. And I went and I did what I did.
Well, do you remember the Goldwater campaign slogan, "In your heart, he's right"? Remember that, Wayne?
Yes, I do.
Well, you know, you talk about Democrats knowing how to fight back. One of the great follow-ups to that was, you know, the slogan was, "In your heart, you know he's right." And the Democrats came back with, "But in your guts, you know he's nuts."
Right. Well, and, you know, Goldwater himself knows that these people ain't right.
Yeah, I mean, he went to his grave pointing a
finger at Bush, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
How long ago did he die?
Offhand, I don't know, but, you know, there's a great segment about the last days of Barry Goldwater in the John Dean book that came out about a year ago, year and a half ago. And he said,
"Conservatives without a conscience?"
Right. Conservatives without conscience.
Right.
And he says in no uncertain terms that these people are not conservative by any operational, political, linguistic definition of that word. They're monsters. They're killers. They're authoritarians. And frankly,
they're
thieves.
They're traitors. They're
fascists. Lies. Killers.
Yeah. You could go on and on and on and on.
Right. And that's not name calling. Those are observable traits of their conduct.
Good God. Could you boys let me in here for a minute?
Oh, go.
Oh, okay, man.
Yeah.
They're a bunch of lying sons of bitches.
Who is?
And that's all they ever have been. Hoo-wah. Okay? That's all they ever have been. Liars, thieves, cheats, and killers. And it's time that... Okay, I'm sorry, guys. I'm not going to lock and load tonight, Bob. I want you to know that
I understand that, Bob, and I know you are. What scares me, and please just let this comment stand for what it is. It doesn't call for response or anything, but please understand that there are a lot of people out there that we are emotionally involved with. Agnes, me, everybody listening to this program loves you and your whole family to pieces. Okay, and what scares me, what I know for a fact because I do follow the news that rolls through every blessed day, is that if any one of us, whether it's one of the people in the chat room, whether it's me and Agnes here, whether it's you out on the high plains, anybody, when they come through the door, I don't care if you've got a grenade launcher, they win.
Yeah.
And I am not willing to sacrifice one fighter. I'm not willing to sacrifice one fighter in this battle to let them prove that they've got bigger guns. You know,
you're worried about me getting shot.
I'm worried about Glenda, and I'm worried about your family, and I'm worried about your neighbors around you. Okay, that's what I'm worried about.
Wayne, you're the same way, aren't you? You worry about your brother, and you care about them, and that is what Jesus taught us to do. But sometimes, once in a while, like Gordon called, you got to go up on the goddamn cross and lay your life down. Okay?
But nobody's calling for you to do that, Bob.
No, I know that. I know no one is calling for me to do it. But in my heart of hearts, in my strength, and in my community, and in my life, I know that I am not afraid to die.
I don't think there's any. I don't think there's a lot of people listening to this program who are, Bob.
I know
because
that, but
there's a greater likelihood that people listening to this program, and Wayne, you know, tell me if I'm wrong.
How about
that have,
those people in Phoenix today that don't have water, that are dying from thirst, and those poor unwashed in Iraq that are being disseminated, their bodies are being blown into red mist, as Malloy used to say, by car bombs and the filth and the ugliness of this Republican Party that has spewed across this continent and across this nation and across this world. How many more years of this can we take until we take it back?
That's the thing, Bob. Wayne, you tell me. What frightens me, and part of the reason we're here, is that somebody's got to keep talking about it. Somebody's got to keep hammering on it until that day dawns. Right now, America is nowhere near being in that place where it is ready to reclaim anything. It is anesthetized. It's anesthetized with debt. It is hypnotized with television, and it is utterly asleep. Wayne,
you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. And that's part of the plan, you know. And listen, I think the awakening is happening. It's going much too slowly. But, you know, I think, and, you know, believe me, I'm as disgusted with our Democratic slight majority as everyone else, but they're the best shot we have. And in 2008, we have to make them a veto-proof majority. I mean, that's the only shot we got. And like it or don't like it, you know, Nancy Pelosi, great disappointment. You know, we got to start hammering about impeachment, you know. To her, even though she doesn't accept emails, you know, from constituents not in her state, don't send it to her damn state. Send it to Washington. She gets emails there, and, you know.
Yeah, and you say a veto-proof majority. Wayne, the fact of the matter is, as far as I can see it, I don't think so much in terms of a veto-proof majority as a filibuster-proof Senate. That means 60 members of the Senate.
Well, that's what I'm talking about, I guess, in different terms.
Because I don't think there's a really good chance at all. And again, I don't think the Republicans want the White House in 2008. They have to put up a candidate, kind of like they had to with Bob Dole. You can't just retire from the field. They'll always stand up and sling their filth.
That's exactly right. No, they don't want it. Well, they, you know, they could read the writing on the wall. They know they're losing. They're going to lose big time. Why do you think the Domenici just switched?
Precisely. I mean, does anybody think that Pete Domenici has just had a road to Damascus moment when he suddenly realized the war is wrong? Hell no.
No, Pete Domenici said, if I want to win re-election, I better switch sides right now. That's what Pete Domenici.
And I hope whoever runs against him in New Mexico puts out ads with every blessed thing he said, talking about what a lovely little war this is until, you know, yesterday.
Right, and the end of the ad can say, and do you really believe this guy just changed his mind?
Do tigers change their spots, that leopards change their spots, or tigers their stripes? No.
No, they don't.
Do Marines ever die?
Heck no. Heck
they
no.
Just get ugly and mean, right? And no, you guys got the point. You got the point, okay? I'm just kind of sitting back here in the weeds and listening. I'm hearing some good talk.
Well, I tell you what, guys, both of you, I've got to hit one more call before we get out of here, and we're running out of time.
All right. Well, you take care, Bob. And Wayne?
Yes, sir.
Don't ever call me that again, or I'll put a boot in your ass.
That's my training, you know. Training, man, military.
No.
But go ahead.
Don't ever call me sir again. I'm gunny.
Okay, but you were going to say, Bob.
If you're a sergeant or gunny, it don't get no better than that. Because
I'll just call you brother, man. Now, what were you going to tell me?
Brother works better, but, hey, listen. If there is this deity up there above and everybody's going to look out to see him, I'll see you in the ranks of St. Michael, and we'll step across that river.
Good enough. Good enough.
Right.
Very good.
We'll see it done.
And all right. Talk to you later, man.
Well, maybe.
Yep.
Maybe.
All right. Bob.
Good night, Bob.
Have a good weekend. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay, and let's see. Susan. You there, Susan?
Yes, I am.
Looks like the last word goes to you.
I'm going to bruise your ego.
Okay. I'm like a banana. Oh, now, see, you just, that was low.
I'm sorry.
Nobody likes me. Everybody hates me. I'm going to eat
some
worms.
However, that wasn't the reason I called.
Okay.
If you run across somebody who actually does start to wake up and they want, and they do ask, in all sincerity, how do I support the troops? Here's what you tell them. Go down to the nearest VA hospital and volunteer. They will fall upon you with glad cries of delight. And you go down there and you volunteer to empty bedpans, or you fetch and you carry, or you volunteer to work in the locked wards where the psycho cases are, and you will get an education that will have you screaming. But you will find out what this war has cost.
Yeah. Yeah. And see,
and also, you will support those troops. in a way that they can use.
Yeah.
And if nothing else, you could sit there and hold some guy who's having a god-awful screaming nightmare. You could sit there and hold his hand and tell him, you're safe. You're home.
Yeah. And sometimes you can just sit there in silence and be the other person in the room.
Yes. And listen.
Precisely. Thank you, Susan.
No problem.
Have a wonderful weekend.
You too. See you Monday.
Monday it is.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. And that, as it turns out, is how it ends for this program for this week. I thank you all for the time that you have spent this week. For those of you who have given to our effort to keep this radio network going as we approach year two, I can tell you only that I am humbled beyond my ability to express it. And I thank you. I so sincerely thank you on behalf of everyone on this network. And I appreciate your support and your continued support. And we will be working on ways to figure out, in some small method, some small manner, some way, to express our gratitude beyond this that we do. So thank you. Agnes produced tonight and did a lovely job. And John Fox is our engineer. Our IT professional is Peter Godbold, who in his capacity as holder of not just the homosexual agenda, but the whole confounded day planner, is on his way next with Strictly Confidential. Ben Birch is the hardest working man in liberal talk at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And what a job he does. If you value what happens on the horn, then that means you value Ben Birch. We are grateful to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters, who helped us get this network started. And in so doing, while they build the American dream, they're also helping us to save the American dream. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. The court doesn't take weekends off in Britain. One of the two men arrested in the botched Glasgow airport car bombing will appear before Westminster magistrates tomorrow. 27-year-old Dr. Bilal Abdullah has been charged with conspiracy to cause explosions. The charges carry a maximum life sentence. The other man in the flaming SUV is still in the hospital with self-inflicted burns covering 90% of his body. Five more physicians with alleged links to the terror cell have been arrested in Australia. And the Philadelphia Inquirer reports that two of the seven physicians apprehended in Britain took the preliminary steps in applying for grad school in the U.S. One of those doctors and his wife were arrested near their England home a few hours after the airport incident. Their one-and-a-half-year-old son was placed with British Social Services. Security remains tight throughout England. Tomorrow marks the second anniversary of the double-decker bus and tube bombings that killed 52 people. Many visitors are also in town for the last day of Wimbledon and the first day of the Tour de France. A federal appeals court dismissed a lawsuit challenging President Bush's domestic spying program. In its ruling, the court said the plaintiffs, who were supported by the ACLU, had no standing to sue the government. U.S. postal inspectors are discounting the credibility of threatening letters sent to newspapers across the country that claim to be from within the Goldman Sachs brokerage. And they say, quote, "Goldman Sachs, hundreds will die. We are inside. You cannot stop us." End quote. The red-inked, handwritten notes were signed AQUSA. Goldman Sachs is taking the threat very seriously. The besieged Red Mosque in Islamabad has been fired upon by Pakistani forces. They've ruptured a fuel tank used for running generators. At least 26 people have died in the now four-day standoff. The number of illegal immigrants arrested at the U.S.-Mexican border has decreased by 24% over the past 9 months, 24%. Border Patrol agents attribute the decline to an additional 6,000 National Guard troops posted along the southwest